This is a special edition of the RTI Press Pass, powered by Rocky Top Insider. Here are your hosts, Rick Butler and Ryan Shumpert.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back into the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass podcast. My name is Rick Butler, joined as always across the virtual room. That is the one, the only Ryan Shumpert. Today is Tuesday, April 16th, and we are back here with the RTI Press Pass because there's a lot going on right now. I know baseball is the only sport in season, but there are a whole lot of off-season storylines for us to get into today. Ryan, welcome back to the show, my friend. How are you doing? How's your week been?
It's been good. Allergies are kicking my butt a little bit, but besides that, doing well.
I can't tell you how big of a sucker punch my allergies gave me this weekend at the Orange and White game, the baseball game. I mean, you saw me on Sunday. We crossed paths at the baseball stadium, and I think your exact words were, you look miserable, or maybe you look awful, or something like that. And yeah. I could do nothing but agree. So I'm sure we are just two of the millions that are unfortunately going through a little bit of spring tree allergies right now.
Yeah, I think so. I look a little worse for the wear myself, but I still think I look better than your eyes looked on Sunday, which tells me how miserable you were, because I feel pretty awful myself. And you were even another gear past me on Sunday.
Yeah, I had the glasses on, and I only wear I hate my glasses. So I'm only wearing them if it's absolutely dire emergency, and well, I wasn't able to see with my contacts in, but that's enough of that. We'll get out into it. Let's see, a couple things. I'm in a different location recording right now. I don't know, Ryan, if you can see behind me. I did see this before.
Yeah, you have like some, You want to say it? I wasn't going to out you. You want to say it?
I have a Georgia Bulldogs shrine behind me. I mean, it is complete with national championship confetti and playbooks and statues, and it is a lot to deal with back here. I'm wondering how it's going to, I don't know, affect my headspace for this show.
Damn good dog, Rick Butler.
Okay. All right. We don't need to go overboard. That line will come back to me at some point. So thank you for throwing that out there into the world. Ryan, you and Jack have been talking a lot about baseball, obviously, for the subscribers of the RTI Press Pass. You've been getting those shows in your feed. A lot of things going on with baseball. There's a huge series coming up this weekend in Lexington. But if you want to go and check out that baseball coverage, maybe we'll talk about it a little bit at the end. But go ahead and check out find the latest RTI Press Pass baseball edition with, again, Ryan Shumpert and Jack Foster to get their tune on sort of just what's going on around the Tennessee baseball world right now. And, of course, you can go and check out RockyTopInsider.com for a lot of Tennessee baseball news, notes, and coverage over there. But, Ryan, you and I are going to sit here and talk a little bit about football and basketball today. And really, I kind of just want to go back till Monday. I mean, we can do a whole show right now just based off the events of Monday alone. Obviously, the later event on Monday night sort of bleeds into Tuesday morning when it became official. But we got a little bit of basketball and football news to talk about from the transfer portal. I say we start with basketball. That's the one that happened first. So we might as well just go in timeline order for the day. What do you say?
Yeah, sounds great.
All right, well, you had the breaking news piece over on RockyTopInsider.com. Highly touted Hofstra transfer commits to Tennessee basketball. This is Darlinston Dubar. A lot of people call him D-Stone, that I quickly figured out in my kind of research about this player, and that's what I'm going to stick with as well. Darlinston D-Stone Dubar. So that's kind of what we got right there. 6'8". He's a guy who started his career as a 3-star prospect at Iowa State. He played there for one season, only got in about 16 games or so, but then he took his talents to Hofstra. Sort of broke out of the mold a little bit playing for the Pride, especially in this final season. So he ended up playing 3 seasons there, but he's a talented, versatile wing. Again, he announces his official commitment to Tennessee on Monday after a visit to Knoxville over the weekend. What can you tell me about Tennessee's new wing commit, D-Stone Dubar?
Yeah, Dubar is I think will be the guy that likely, obviously still a lot of roster movement to go, but I think likely replaces Josiah Jordan James and starts in that 4 spot for Tennessee next season. Listed at 6'8", I think maybe a little bit shorter than that, but a tall wing who kind of has guard skills, is not a traditional big man by any means, but has the size, has the length to be able to guard some big men and switch a lot of things defensively. So a really talented offensive player, averaged 17.8 points to go along with 6.8 rebounds per game. But to me, the thing that stands out is 54% shooting from the field, 39.9% shooting from three-point range at 73-3. So a dude that hit a lot of three-pointers at a very high clip. And this is, you know, just for reference point, I guess, 73 threes would have been by far the second most made threes by anyone on Tennessee's roster last year. And I think really the last handful of years, it would have been by far the second most. I think Dalton Connect was just shy of 100 last season. 2 years prior to that, I think Santiago Vescovi was in the 90s and the 100s. So not just a unreal quantity and, you know, three-point shooter like those two guys were, but a dude that shoots them at a pretty high clip and shoots a lot of them. I mean, I had said something, I think, in our podcast kind of towards, you know, right after the season of people, you know, positions of what Tennessee needed. I said they needed a guy that would have at the four spot that could guard bigs and could at least hit 30 to 43s in that range. And you get a guy that hit 73 last year. So a big addition, a guy that I like, a real catch and shoot shooter. I don't think he's going to create a ton off the dribble. But you know, that's again, kind of similar to what Josiah Jordan James' game was like too. And I think a get to really like for Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just sort of want to follow up on the three-point line because that was what stuck out to me too. You look at his first 2 years at Hofstra and he proved himself to be a very well-rounded player who could score the basketball. Now, maybe he didn't immediately come out as the 18 points per game threat that he turned into in those first 2 years, but he proved that he was a well-rounded player. He was a versatile player. He could do different things from the floor. The three-point attempts, though, is what I specifically look at. He shot 112 three-pointers in his first year, 104 in his second year, and then all the way up to 183 in his third year. So they certainly gave him the green light, but I figured that is something that he specifically worked on throughout his seasons over there at Hofstra. That's Long Island, right? Is that Hofstra's Long Island,
it's
New York?
It's in New York. I'm not sure. You're probably right, but I'm not positive.
Okay, somewhere around New York. But that just stuck out to me as well. It really seemed like in that third year, Hofstra looked at Dubar as one of their shooters, one of their scorers, a guy who they needed to run the offense through, a guy that needed to get his shots up. And that turned into some pretty impressive performances against some pretty good teams. I mean, Dubar went for 24-8 in a road game at Duke last season. He went for 24-11 in a game against South Florida. That was a good showing. And even going back to that Duke game, I believe Duke won that game, but Hofstra was in it for a good bit. Now, maybe the lead, you know, dropped down to about 10 points or so at various times, but Dubar was one of the guys keeping them in. The last sort of note I have on the scoring side of things is, at least during his final season at Hofstra, he was a double-double watch kind of guy for each game. He only had two games for the Hofstra last year where he did not score into double digits, and he had eight games throughout the year where he added in double-digit rebounding into his scoring. So I believe he had 8-point rebound double-doubles last year. That was something to watch for as he sort of, you know, got a little bit gritty there in the paint, went up for more rebounds. So I've really liked what you've seen from Dubar, which is sort of the development that he had at Hofstra, and obviously that leads you to a place like Tennessee.
Yeah, you said a couple of those games. Just to add a couple, St. John's, obviously a Big East team. He had 23-5 in that one. And then Charleston was the best team in the CAA conference that Hofstra is in. He had 19-4 in the game at College of Charleston and 20-12 in the game at home. So is, you know, played well against a better competition. You know, I think a couple of the things that, other things that stand out are, you know, okay, stands out. I'm not sure how to call this really a question, but kind of an interesting shot. It's a little bit of a low release, kind of comes across his body a little bit. And you know, that's one of the things that you kind of wonder about with when you see those jumping numbers, which is really from his sophomore year to his junior year, jumping production from 3-point range, you know, what he kind of found, how he kind of found the rhythm. So, you know, that was something that stood out from watching him. He scores on a lot of cuts, which I think is, you know, when you look at how is he going to score besides catch and shoot opportunities, because like I said earlier, he's not a dude that creates a ton off the dribble. Off cuts makes a lot of sense. Tennessee's an offense that has a lot of off-ball movement. You know, a lot of slip screens, which he'll be doing a lot of screening off ball in that four spot. You know, wouldn't necessarily think a bunch of pick and roll, but maybe some pick and pop opportunities. And then, you know, one, I'm trying to see if I can find the stat. I bookmarked the tweet, but it was just a list of the most highest offensive efficiency ratings for players in all of college basketball last season, not just transfers necessarily, but players as a whole. And he was, I think, maybe number four on that list. He was in the top five. So a really efficient offensive player, which you would expect from a guy that, you know, like I said, shot basically 40% from three, 54% from three or from the field, a very efficient scorer for sure.
So I'm glad that you brought up his shot, because that was something that also stood out to me. And I want to talk about the shot real quick for a second. And not that I am one to criticize the shot, because as Ryan, you can attest to, my basketball shot is more or less a work in progress, to put it nicely, right?
Yes, yes, to put okay. it nicely.
Yes, to put it nicely. So I am certainly not the end-all, be-all. Obviously, guys are in the league, you know, guys are in the pros with kind of funky looking shots. You look at a Sean Marion type, something like that. But it is kind of funny. The way that I thought of it, honestly, was, Ryan, let's say you and I are in the 1800s, right? You and I are at the OK Corral, right? We're a couple of gunslinging cowboys, and we get into a fight. We're like, let's go do a draw outside of the saloon, right? We walk outside and we both, you know, got the gun on your hip, you know, it's on your dominant hand side. It'd be like if you had to reach all the way to your other side to grab it and then kind of yeah. come back across your body to then, you know, put it in where it's supposed to be. So it is kind of funky that thought of, you know, he starts it really down low by his left hip. He brings it all the way up high by his right shoulder. And that was one of the things that I was watching for in the highlights. Obviously, I'm not really familiar with Hofstra basketball, but I tried to familiarize myself as much as I could with Dubart's game. And I will say, it even though it's a little bit of a funky looking shot, takes a little bit of time to get it going, it didn't necessarily seem like he had trouble getting that shot off, even when he had a little bit of pressure in his face. Now, obviously, they don't show the worst moments in highlight reels, but I did watch a couple of other, you know, just kind of game film that wasn't necessarily a highlight film. So we'll see how that goes. It doesn't really seem like a problem. Obviously, he's shooting 18 points a game with it, so he's really mastered it. Maybe I should try that for my own shot.
Maybe.
That's a work in progress.
That might be it.
But it is a little interesting, and I'd encourage people to go seek it out if they kind of want to see what we're talking about here.
Yeah, no, I think he's a plenty good contested shooter. You know, it's just maybe the wiggle room to get that shot off might be a little, it might take him a little longer than other guys. So yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, I think the rebounding numbers will just be interesting to see how that translates. You know, obviously, I think that's a very underrated thing Josiah Jordan James did, was how good of a rebounder he was for his size. I don't know if you can expect Dubar to be quite that, but you expect him to be a dude that helps out and can at least be in that, you know, five rebounds per game category, I think. And yeah, I found a list. It was minimum of 15 possessions used a game, and he is 15.2 possessions used, but he was fourth with, you know, average of 1.15 points per possession he was used to. Three guys ahead of him on that list were North Florida's Chaz Lanier, Antonio Reeves of Kentucky, Zach Edey at Purdue. Immediately behind him, Mark Sears at Alabama, and Terrence Shannon at Illinois. So, obviously, those four guys at big schools, Tennessee faced all of them. All four of those dudes really good scorers, so that stands out. And then I guess just the final two quick things on him. Visited this past weekend. We had that on RTI. Beforehand, was one of two guys Tennessee hosted on a visit, and then he played for a Charlotte native. He played for Bobby Mays, B Mays Elite, obviously Bobby Mays, former Tennessee point guard, his AAU program. So that was, you know, kind of a small connection there between Tennessee and Darlinson Dubar. Obviously, they didn't pursue him, at least that I know of, out of high school. But a few years later, they another North Carolina guy. They lost Tennessee, loses one or loses two, I guess, because Freddie DeLeon and Jonas Adu were both North Carolina guys. They add one, and they'll try to add another one as they continue to pursue Cade Tyson, who's also, I believe, from the Charlotte area.
Well, you set up the transition pretty well. That's sort of what I wanted to go into next to sort of wrap things up on D. Stone Dubar. If you want to go and check out any of our work on him already, by the time that you're listening to this, there is at least three articles that you can go and find. Number one is the breaking news article with his announcement that he would be committing to Tennessee. The other one is sort of an in-depth look at his path to Tennessee, talking about Iowa State and Hofstra, what all he did at both of those programs. And then last but not least, we have a big watch piece where you can go and look at a huge collection of highlights from his time at Hofstra, games against Duke and South Florida. He throws down a couple of ridiculous dunks as well, so we have those mixed in. So if you want to go and check out any of those, head over to RockyTopInsider.com.
Ryan, 1 year of eligibility. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the last thing. 1 year of super senior, 1 year of eligibility.
Good call. 1 year of eligibility left. So sort of a connect situation, which Tennessee fans are immediately familiar with. Ryan, look at the Tennessee side of things. You just said it. Tennessee's lost four guys to the portal so far. Jonas Adu, Tobe Awaka, Freddie DeLeon, and DJ Jefferson. Some of those expected. Some of those might have caught off guard a little bit. But the college basketball world is wild right now. I got to give credit to, I believe it's Tucker Harlan of Fox Sports Knoxville. Also yep. Does some stuff with UT as a student. Yes, there you go. So he kind of showed it, the Rob Lanier domino effect that SMU yeah. caused, and how that's even come back to affect the SEC. We know that Coach Calipari is recruiting very hard at Arkansas right now, trying to bring a lot of guys in. We know that at Pope at Kentucky is trying to do the same with his program. So there's a lot of things going on in the college basketball world right now. Just what is out there catching your eye on things?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the stuff in the SEC and just the stuff in the transfer portal as a whole is obviously extremely, extremely crazy. I think I saw, I want to say, not be premature here because I know there were some rumors about it, but I think I saw it officially, Omar Ballo is going to Indiana. He was one of the top guys in the portal, the Arizona big man. So that was interesting. And then, yeah, just Arkansas and Kentucky roster movement, obviously, as you'd expect, the coaching change, or a lot of it coaching changes, at least today, both those rosters went to about close to zero. So they continue to try to add some guys. I know Big Z is going to go to Arkansas. I'm sure some more guys from Kentucky will either follow Cal or some of those recruits will follow Cal. And I know Kentucky added a kid that was committed to BYU before. So they've kind of done the same thing with a kid that was going to go play for Mark Pope. So, you know, just that stuff and some general portal following across the country and particularly in the SEC. Aiden Holloway, I did see that today, the Auburn guard, who was a freshman this year, entered the transfer portal. He's visiting Alabama, I believe, this weekend. So that's an interesting one to keep an eye on.
You had just mentioned a name that is tied to Tennessee a minute ago. Just tell me a little bit about who that is and sort of what's the latest around the basketball program that you've seen for Tennessee.
Yeah, Cade Tyson's a 6'7" wing from Monroe, North Carolina. Played two seasons at Belmont, so obviously a guy familiar with the Volunteer State. Played for Casey Alexander's program, and he's widely considered the best shooter in the transfer portal. He shot a pretty impressive 46.5% from three-point range last year, went 80 of 172 from deep, 16.2 points, 5.9 rebounds a game. And, you know, dude is super sought after in the portal. He was at Tennessee this past weekend. The plan is for him to go to North Carolina this weekend. I was told by someone that, you know, North Carolina is kind of his dream school growing up in North Carolina. So I think it's going to be, you know, a tough task for Tennessee to land him, but, you know, certainly not an impossible one either. Tennessee swinging there. We'll see what happens. I know there has been interest and some things linking him to both Kansas and UConn, but at the time of this recording, at least that I have seen, no planned visits there. So it feels like Tennessee and North Carolina are the two top contenders at this point. We'll see if he adds any more visits. And if he does and he gets further and further away from a Tennessee visit, you would think that would kind of work against the Vols. But a really good three-point shooter, you know, the best three-point shooter in the portal out there. And then, you know, at 6'7", kind of he's more of a true wing. He's not a four guy, but a dude that could probably help Tennessee out and place the four some. I think the question with him, without having – you know, just from talking to some people, not having dove into his game, super watched a bunch of film on him or anything like that. It's just, you know, how athletically, how well will he hold up in the SEC, you know, kind of on the defensive end. And again, like Dubar, I don't think he's a guy I expect to do a ton of scoring off the dribble, but, you know, a guy that averaged 16.2 points per game in Missouri Valley Conference, which is a really good conference and for a really good Belmont program.
There you go. As always, you can follow along with Rocky Top Insider throughout all of the Tennessee basketball offseason as the portal continues to get wild. Any other kind of wrap-up thoughts, Ryan, on the portal, on the basketball scene, on Tennessee basketball, just wherever you want to take it?
Yeah, a couple more Tennessee things, actually.
Okay,
first, another visitor, Igor, I'm honestly not sure how to pronounce the name, Milicic from Charlotte. I guess, first of all, Kay Tyson, 2 years of eligibility left. So he's a guy that has a couple seasons. Milicic is from Charlotte, is a guy with 1 year of eligibility. He's a 6'10", 225-pound wing. You might hear 6'10" and think center. but not really. He's visiting Tennessee today, time of this recording, Tuesday. So we'll see what happens there. Another dude that is just a pretty talented scorer, hit 37.6% of his threes last year, 56 made three-pointers on the season, so a little bit lower rate. Has a pretty good highlight tape with a number of impressive dunks, can score a little bit off the dribble. And again, you think 6'11", you would think center. Yeah. Not really. It's more of a kind of a stretch four, I would say a true four, but I was told, you know, plays more of a three than he is the five. So maybe in some potential real, real small ball lineups, but not a guy that's going to address Tennessee's center need. And I guess that leads me to that final point. Obviously, that's Tennessee loses Jonas Adu. They lose Tobey Walker to the portal last week. JP Estrella is the one kind of true five. Obviously, Cade Phillips is a big man too, though more of a power forward that's left on the roster currently. So, you know, it's kind of interesting to me. We haven't really seen, at least I haven't seen, many names surface in the transfer portal as potential fives for Tennessee. I think the Vols are continuing to talk to Tobey Awaka, hoping to get Tobey Awaka back for next year. I don't think that's, you know, definitely not a sure thing or anything like that, but I do think that's remains a possibility for Tennessee. And I don't think Tennessee's turning the page on, you know, necessarily losing Awaka for sure. So again, not a sure thing there, not anything that makes me think it's definitely going to happen, but it is ongoing communication and remains a possibility at the time of this recording on Tuesday. But if there's anything the transfer portal has taught me in the last 10 days, the stuff changes awful quickly. So maybe by the time you're listening to that, it's gone one way or the other a little bit more definitively.
It certainly does. The transfer portal is a volatile place that is as sort of mysterious as it sounds, the transfer portal. Unless you got any basketball thoughts, that actually leads me into a pretty good thought about our next conversation.
Yeah, take it away. I think that's all I got on basketball.
Portal being a mysterious place and not everybody sort of knows what's going on. I wrote about it today just sort of because it has the Tennessee tie. I thought that was an interesting story, but did you see what was going on with former Tennessee defensive back and former Innsworth High School defensive back, Key Lawrence? Did you see some of the mix-up that happened with him this morning?
Maybe not. I thought I saw that he entered the portal, but maybe there's more
to it. Aha! Okay, so get this. So after Key Lawrence left Tennessee, he went to play his next 3 years at Oklahoma. This past season, he entered the transfer portal during the offseason. He ends up at Ole Miss. Now, Tuesday morning being the first day that the transfer portal reopens for the spring session, Keyshawn Lawrence's name from Ole Miss hits the portal, and people are saying, wow, you know, what's going on here? He just transferred to Ole Miss. Now he's already trying to leave. What's going on? It turns out that Ole Miss has a walk-on linebacker with the exact name of Keyshawn Lawrence, who did enter the transfer portal. So there was a Keyshawn Lawrence. It's just that everybody looked at the star defensive back rather than the walk-on linebacker. A couple of the major recruiting websites even had, you know, Keyshawn Lawrence defensive back, Key Lawrence. They had them in their transfer portal database. I mean, this confused and tricked a ton of people today, but it does sound like that the former Vol is going to stay at Ole Miss for his final season. It just kind of leads to, again, your point of everything is a little bit weird. Nothing is very certain. Obviously, there's some clogs in the gears at times, but that was one of the more interesting and just kind of more funny stories to come out of the portal world this morning on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's wild, man. That's crazy. Hadn't seen that one happen before.
Two dudes with the exact same name on the same team. Wild. So
yeah, wild.
That kind of leads us to our next point. Again, we're sort of backtracking on the events of Monday. About, I would say, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, somewhere in that time frame, Tennessee linebacker, a rising junior in the Vols program, Elijah Herring, announces that he was going to be entering the transfer portal when it opened up on Tuesday. Again, Herring, a two-year linebacker with the Tennessee program. He jumped into a starting position as the Mike linebacker after Keenan Peely's injury in the season opener against Virginia last season. Had some ups, had some downs. He did end the season as Tennessee's leading tackler with 76 tackles. Obviously, when you're a linebacker like that in the middle, you're around a lot of things. So he was certainly a guy who was in and around a whole lot of tackles for the Tennessee defense last year. but has also missed the vast majority of the spring camp with injury this season as well. So even just a couple days ago, you and I sitting there on the sideline of the orange and white game, you look over and Elijah Herring sitting there in sort of street clothes as he was kept away from that game. So obviously it wasn't the greatest spring for Herring, as again, he's recovering from injury. Nobody wants to be doing that, but it looks like after 2 years in Knoxville, he will be looking for a new home. The other side of that, though, is that Elijah Herring's brother, Caleb Herring, who is a, I guess, a rising sophomore edge rusher, sort of, you know, that defensive line, linebacker, edge rusher role, he is sticking with the team, at least for right now. So you do lose one of the Herring brothers if you're Tennessee Athletics, but that's sort of the news. Elijah Herring, again, the first Tennessee player to announce his intentions to enter the portal after spring camp, came just over 48 hours from Tennessee's orange and white game on Saturday. Reaction sort of mixed online. Obviously, I think some people kind of understand that there's a lot of depth in the room for Tennessee. Others a little bit upset at the loss, but that is it. Tennessee's first transfer portal edition happens on Monday night / Tuesday morning with Elijah Herring.
Yeah, I mean, I would kind of fight back against a lot of depth in the room. I think Tennessee doesn't have a ton of depth at linebacker, especially now. I think they have very, very little depth. Now, to your point, Herring started a bunch of games for Tennessee last year after Keenan Peely got injured. You know, I don't think he was going to be in the top two. You know, I would have penciled him in as Tennessee's fourth linebacker exiting spring practice, at least behind Keenan Peely, and then behind obviously the sophomores Arian Carter and Jeremiah Tielander. So you kind of get it from the playing time standpoint, but I do think it is a blow for Tennessee's depth. You kind of look at who's there now. You have Caleb Perry, who's a junior, who's played some. Jalen Smith going into his sophomore year, Edwin Spillman, the early enrollee linebacker from Lipscomb Academy in Nashville. I thought he looked really good in the spring game. So you kind of look at that, you wonder if that's maybe a spot Tennessee would look to add a body at potentially in the transfer portal. I'm not sure. And, you know, Herring was a fine player, but I don't think, you know, and obviously guys get better and he could have gotten a lot better, taking a big step forward. But, you know, I don't think he was necessarily a starting quality, you know, player. Starting quality linebacker in the SEC. Yeah, I think he's certainly capable of starting at a power four school, I guess, now. But a guy that you'd want to be a backup. And obviously, when Keenan Peely got hurt, whatever it was, 23 plays into the season, he was thrust in being a starter the entirety of the year. And he had some good games, but also had, you know, some tough games and some bad moments, too. So a loss from a depth standpoint. I don't think it's a huge loss from a talent standpoint. And, you know, I will say, you texted, you know, I hadn't seen it. I was literally on my phone talking to somebody when you texted about it saying, I'll get the Herring portal in our group with Jack and myself. And my first thought that it was going to be Caleb Herring because, you know, Tennessee's just got so much depth.
Depth right there.
Yeah, it felt like Caleb Herring, even as talented as he is, like probably wasn't going to play much this year or was going to have a hard time getting to the field. And when I realized that it was Elijah Herring, not Caleb Herring, I was like, oh, okay, I think this is better for Tennessee. I think Caleb Herring, while he's Elijah Herring's path to playing snaps was bigger this year, I think Caleb Herring's ceiling is still higher and a dude that could be really good for Tennessee down the road. So obviously we'll see what happens in the long term, but maybe Tennessee keeps the Herring brother that they would choose to keep.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said there. And I did see some other people, like I had mentioned, talking about, you know, well, Tennessee's got depth and they're going to bring back Arian Carter and Jeremiah Tielander's looking good. You know, and he played he had a good freshman season. And I do think that those things are true. You know, certainly Jeremiah Tielander, for one reason or the other, was one of the guys that had caught my eye through spring camp, really interested to see what sort of jump he makes from year one to year two. But like you said as well, even if Elijah Herring had sort of lost that starting spot, it's still a good player to have on the sidelines, to have as a depth piece, because there's not a ton behind him. And you're right. The guys that Tennessee does have in the room, Keenan Peely talked about this during his press conference interview during the spring. A lot of young guys in the room. Edwin Spillman is one of the guys who sort of flashed a little bit of brilliance out there on the at the spring game. I believe he tied Tennessee's lead for tackles with 6 in that game. But at the same time, this is just a freshman, right? I don't think you can expect a whole ton of him right now as things currently stand. So it is a loss for Tennessee, but you're right. It's not necessarily a, you know, you look at the headline of Tennessee's leading tackler enters the transfer portal, and I don't think it's as dire as maybe that exact statement is. So I agree with a lot of what you said there. we'll see what Tennessee does, and we'll see if that adds to a position of need from the transfer portal. But speaking of those exact words, Ryan, that's something that you wrote about yesterday, maybe positions of need that Tennessee could start to target. I read through that piece yesterday. I loved it. We didn't write it together. We didn't talk about it, but I was on the same wavelength with you as I was going down through. You want to talk about that at all and just kind of some of what you found from the research and some of what that, where that research took some of your opinions?
Certainly. I think the main two, and maybe you'd throw inside linebacker in there.
Yeah,
now.
Maybe now. This was written before Herring.
But yeah, I just think it's defensive back and running back are the two spots you look at. In defensive backfield, it just doesn't feel like there's a ton of depth there. Obviously, that's been any piece that, you know, was about places of need for Tennessee in the transfer portal since Josh Heupel's been there. I've probably had defensive back near the top. They've never been as aggressive as I feel like they should be, or I feel like they might be. So who knows if they will be. It does kind of feel like the starters are relatively set, or you have a good idea, but it just doesn't feel like there's much depth there, and injuries could be a much bigger blow. And one thing I'll say, especially at corner, you know, the last few years, it felt like at corner, Tennessee had, there wasn't a very big gap between Tennessee's starting corners and their third string corners. And I feel like that gap's a lot bigger now. And I think it kind of goes both ways, where I think Tennessee's starting quarterback corners, who I think will be Ricky Gibson and Jermon McCoy, both sophomores, I think those guys are better, more talented than what Tennessee's been starting in the last few years, at least higher ceiling. But I also think the third string corners Tennessee currently has is worse than they've been the last few years. So you see that gap is a lot bigger. And I think it's because the top of the depth chart and the bottom of the depth chart have moved in opposite directions. So maybe adding pieces there, some pieces at safety, that'll be interesting to see. And then running backs, just the interesting one with Cam Seldon, who looks like will be out in the fall camp and maybe potentially misses a little bit of the season. He's supposed to be the backup, and no one really besides Dylan Sampson is very proven at that spot. So, it just kind of depends on what's the trust level like with those guys. And, you know, that's the thing I'll say about it too, where it gets maybe a little more complicated, because there's the NIL, portion of it. And I don't think Tennessee should go spend a lot of NIL money going to get a really good running back. So there becomes a point of who Tennessee can't afford, who it is worth, maybe not afford, but who it is worth them spending NIL money on. Is that better than Deshaun Bishop and Khalifa Keith? Because you get to the point, there's no point in bringing somebody in if they're not definitively going to be better than those guys and you really feel like you have a better option. You know, I kind of compare it to, and sorry for the stray here, but DeMondre London. This is a DeMondre London stray. Sorry to DeMondre if he's listening. There's no point in Tennessee bringing DeMondre London in to the running back room. The guy that I think played on Pruitt's first team for Michigan State was not very good. Big, guy that got in the transfer portal was not better than the third or fourth guy they had. You don't bring Tennessee shouldn't bring somebody in just to bring somebody in, because if they're not definitively better 100%. Than Sean Bishop and Peyton Lewis and Khalifa Keith. But if you find a middle ground there of a guy that's not just super super sought after and wants a ton of NIL money, and someone who's willing to come in and, potentially be a number two running back on the roster, number three running back on the roster. Obviously Tennessee used three guys last year, so there's going to be opportunities if they get someone solid. I think it would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think for the most part in defensive backs, you hit the nail on the head. I really don't have anything to add there, except for Josh Heupel talked about it after the spring game. He said, we've had development. We've had a lot of growth through the spring camp because of all the different newcomers that Tennessee has brought in, but they're looking to find a core. They're looking to find a select group of guys, maybe 5-6 guys that they say, hey, here are our dogs, right? Here's where we're going to roll into Tuscaloosa, Alabama with, and we're going to try to slow down the passing game with these guys right here. So that's going to be a storyline as it continues over the summer. Does Tennessee add anybody? That's obviously what you just talked about. And then the running back room, brilliant point. I mean, brilliant, right? That's economics right there, right? That's sports meets economics. Why are you going to go pay for someone or some, something, but someone in this case, if they're not necessarily going to, Tennessee doesn't need a very high price tag running back right now, right? So if you're looking at some of the lower tier ones, well, you're right. If they're going to be sort of on the same page as a Deshaun Bishop and a Khalifa Keith, guys who have been in your program and who have sort of been working, then maybe that's not the most efficient way to spend that money. So I think you bring up a great point there. In your article, you also talk about the offensive line, which sort of feels like, what's the word when something just happens every year? It's just something routine, right? Any team could fortify the trenches if they wanted to. That's certainly something. And then I think you look at that spring game from the other day and you look at Tennessee's quarterbacks, obviously Nico Iamaleava, one of the most talked about names across the college football landscape. But behind him, you have a freshman quarterback in Jake Merklinger and a longtime veteran in Gaston Moore. But Gaston Moore is certainly not a guy who has seen a lot of field experience, despite the fact that he knows the Josh Heupel offense like the back of his hand, could probably even be another assistant coach there on the squad. But maybe that's a place again, but we know that can be tricky as well, because sometimes, players are looking at Tennessee's situation saying, hey, you're pretty set with this Nico guy. Maybe that's not the place for me. So maybe that one's a little bit trickier, but end all be all, I really like what you said about both the secondary and the running backs. I think that's a place where if Tennessee can find something, then hey, if you can make it work, go grab it. And then who knows, maybe they go and find another linebacker or so after this Elijah Herring news. But certainly there are some possibilities on the table.
Yeah, and it'll just be interesting to see how active they are, generally speaking, because they haven't, they didn't add anybody, I don't think, after the spring last year. No. It'll be interesting to see if they lose anybody else to the portal post spring practice. So it's going to be, just interesting to follow to see how aggressive they are, because the spring portal, it's very, and it always is, even in the winter, an element of fit, but it feels like you got to check a lot of boxes for it to make sense to add somebody at this point in time, especially because at this point you're 3 months away from the start of fall camp and you might not have anybody there until the end of May. And it's a lot of personality, NIL situation, them being comfortable with whatever role you're asking them to come in. Because typically you're not in Tennessee, I don't think, is looking for starters necessarily. So there's a lot of things, a lot of boxes that have to be checked, and it'll be curious to see if Tennessee finds somebody that fits their needs and makes a lot of sense for them to pursue.
Yeah. Again, we talking about the transfer portal, obviously opening up after spring game. We talked a little bit about spring game on the YouTube channel. So if you find this on the podcasting world, go ahead and check out the YouTube world to go find out some of our reactions for the orange and white game. But I almost said fall. Spring camp for Tennessee football is now in the books. Now we have another little offseason period here of the summer as the transfer portal opens up, as teams start to contact players in the portal to see who might be able to add to their team. And we will be following it the whole way through. Ryan, any other kind of thoughts from the college football world, from the transfer portal world that you've seen so far? As we, I guess it hasn't really been open that day. As I say this, it's only 3:00 in the afternoon. So, but anything else that you've seen that's piqued your interest?
Not really to this point, but I do. It does sound like it's going to be a particularly interesting spring period. It just sounds like there's a lot of buzz that a lot of stuff's going to be going on. Obviously, I think Alabama and a number of other schools will be really aggressive pursuing guys. So, and when it comes to the spring portal period, which is usually relatively tame, I think this one could be a little more entertaining. But as you said, still pretty early on, and I don't, nothing I've seen so far has jumped out at me necessarily.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, quick little preview. We've got a top four matchup in Lexington, Kentucky this weekend coming up. Is that true?
Yeah, it's a big one. About 5 years ago, you say Tennessee and Kentucky are going to play a top five basketball matchup in late April. I wouldn't believe it. So it's crazy. Kentucky's in first place in the SEC. They're 14-1. It kind of feels like you just keep waiting for the other shoe to drop with this team. But at this point, 14-1 is 14-1. I think Kentucky's really good. It's going to be the most challenging series Tennessee's had to this point in their season. And they go to a place that, they didn't play very well in 2 years ago. And it's, two completely different styles of teams. Kentucky plays kind of a small ball style. Tennessee does not play much small ball, power hitting team. And I think maybe the thing that's most key for Kentucky in a year where just about everybody outside of Arkansas feels like they have a lot of pitching questions. Kentucky pitching staff's been really good, so it's going to be a big challenge. Jack and I will record a podcast probably on Wednesday, maybe on Thursday, but we'll have a preview of it up later in the week and everything else to know about the LSU series this past weekend.
There you go. A lot of good stuff on the horizon. Tennessee, Texas A&M, Arkansas, Kentucky. I mean, just powerhouse teams right there. What is that? Four teams right there, sort of in the top five around there. I don't know. SEC baseball, pretty darn good.
I think
this year.
The entire top four, I think, is SEC.
Okay, that's what I was trying to figure out, who that maybe A&M, fifth Arkansas team that slid in. Tennessee, Kentucky.
Yep.
It's a pretty loaded conference right there. So always,
and it's hilarious because I've been talking about it, and it feels like a down year in the SEC. It really does feel like a down year in the SEC, and they have the top four teams in the country. And Tennessee gets some nice scheduling breaks this year. They don't have to play either Arkansas or A&M, who are obviously two of the three or four, five best teams in the conference.
Arkansas has been the top team in the league in the nation for a lot of the year so far. I might be catching you off guard with this question. Do you think maybe Texas A&M has taken over that top spot, or is it just kind of, hey, it's two really good teams? You know, it's kind of neck and neck. It just kind of depends on the series. I've been really impressed with Texas A&M has been able to do. I know we're just talking about Kentucky being the standings leader, but this Aggies team has really impressed me.
I think, you know, A&M passed them in a lot of rankings this week because Arkansas dropped 2 out of 3 to Alabama this weekend, and it's probably not a massive gap, but I would take Arkansas as the best team in the country and the best team in the conference. I still think the Hogs have the best team.
Man, there's a lot going on right now. As always, you can go and find all of it from a Tennessee perspective over on RockyTopInsider.com. We have the latest in Tennessee football, baseball, and basketball. And then we have a couple of other stories from around the Tennessee sports world. Rekia Jackson goes fourth overall to the Los Angeles Sparks in the WNBA draft. This is now 4 consecutive years that Tennessee has put a player in the WNBA inside the top 10 overall picks of the draft. 3 straight years with the 9th overall selection, and then Rekia Jackson jumps up to the 4th overall pick. Kim Caldwell, Tennessee's newest Lady Vols head basketball coach, she just announced that her staff is finalized. I believe we have that up on the website as well. So there's a lot going on in the Tennessee sports world right now, and we will have you covered. Ryan, anything else kind of on the way out before we finish out the work week, before you head over to Lexington? There's a lot going on right now. Anything else?
No, I think we've hit about all of it, but you're right. Just super busy on all fronts. Obviously, spring practice over, but spring portal period open for the next 2 weeks. So it'll be interesting to see what happens on that front.
Certainly will. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap this thing up, and let's go ahead and get it out to the people. Thank you so much for listening to the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass podcast today. If you want to go and follow Ryan Shumpert, you can do that at rshump00. That is S-C-H-U-M-P. If you want to follow our good buddy Jack Foster, you can do that at Jack Foster Media on Twitter. And of course, if you want to follow myself, you can do that at Rick_Butler. It's just R-I-C with no K, like the Nature Boy himself. Otherwise, though, make sure you're checking out at Rocky Top Insider on all different social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Wherever you are, we are there as well, except for Threads. If you're still one of these weirdos that's doing the Threads thing, well, we're not there. So come ahead and join us with the rest of the people. We're not going to go do the Threads thing, maybe unless it jumps up at some point. All right, we're getting to ramble mode. Let's go ahead and wrap this thing up. Ryan, thank you so much for hanging out today. He will be in Lexington this weekend, so make sure you are following Ryan for all the best Tennessee baseball news. But otherwise, we're going to get out of here. Thank you so much. Have a good weekend. We hope you enjoyed the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass podcast.